friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I rationalize it because I make them do a chore first, and then I let them get away with whatever they want to get. That's called parenting, guys. In case you missed it, coming up in about 40 minutes, but right now, it's a football Friday. It's an F-off Friday. Someone I love to tell F-off on the regular. You know him, you love him. Brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl Ryder joins us now. Daryl.
Hello, Nick.
Hello, Daryl. How are you?
I will not be doing any chores to get in your good graces.
That's not true. I think you're going to help us with a house in 2 weeks, right?
That's true.
I don't know that we've officialized that, but I think that's good. I think that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
We were just talking about this. When it comes to confidence on Sunday, who do you have more confidence in this Patriots game, in Kevin Stefanski or Dylan Gabriel?
Kevin Stefanski.
That sounded like a question.
Yeah, well, Kevin can't go out there and play for Dylan Gabriel. And I honestly, I don't have a lot of confidence in Dylan because he really hasn't given you much reason to be confident in him. And this is a Patriot front that's very stout. They don't allow any explosive runs, at least they haven't to date. They're holding teams under 50 yards rushing per game. And I kind of feel like that's the Browns' only hope, is that they get Quinshon Judkins going because, well, Dylan Gabriel doesn't throw the ball down the field. And you kind of need to do that in a league that is a passing league. So I kind of have to go with Kevin because, well, Dylan doesn't really instill a lot of confidence in me.
I actually agree, by the way. And my thing is, there have been open players the first seven games of this season. Even when Joe was in, there were open players, and Joe either didn't throw to them or didn't see them. Dylan, the same thing. Maybe this would be different if it was a week before, but right. Like I can't get the Quinshon in the flat, like being able to waltz into the end zone if Dylan just throws the ball out of my head, and I can't get the Jerome Ford play or as a pick play that worked, and Dylan threw it to the exploding wide receiver and defensive back combo.
Yeah, I mean, there were about a couple, there were three or four plays in the press box. I'm sitting next to Andy Baskin, and I'm just like, he's open, and Dylan's doing nothing with the ball. I don't know if that's because he can't see what's going on, probably because he's 5'9", but that's just what it is. And he's thrown four passes in three games over 20 yards.
And that's not good, right?
No, that's just not how this works in the NFL. I'm to a point now, I don't care if he goes out and throws three picks in New England on Sunday if there throws down the field, because I want to see him throw the ball down the field. And I get last week I a little bit of a pass on the deep balls last week because of the wind and the rain and all that. The game plan was to run the ball, so I'm not going to be a hypocrite there. That was the right thing, the smart thing to do. But I need the Patriots, I think, are 24th against the pass, Nick. Need to see Dylan throw the ball on Sunday down the field. Now, I'm not advocating for him to drop back 58 times like he did against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Don't misunderstand me. But I think there's a happy medium in there. And also, too, he's got to keep this Patriot defense honest, because if you let them stack the box, well, it's going to be a very long afternoon for everybody, including Quinshon Judkins.
I just like him to take the throws that are there.
There's that, too.
Like, I mean, I think if he had done that the 3 weeks here, again, like, we're not in the Dylan can change my opinion on whether he's a starter or not phase. I think we're in the can Dylan make me not want to think about Shedeur Sanders phase. And by the way, that's just whoever the backup is. That'd have to be specific to Shedeur. Like, it felt like we had the promise of a functional offense against Minnesota. And then the last 2 weeks, Quinshon was your function last week because Dylan, I thought, was just not great in the 18 throws he did have. And then 2 weeks ago, it was just a pure disaster.
Right. You're not getting any argument from me. I maintain that this kid is a backup quarterback, and that's okay. He's playing like he's a backup quarterback. It's average. He elevates nobody around him. He's not going to lose you the game by turning it over, but he's not going to go out there and win you a game either. And at least right now. Now, I'm open-minded enough. He can change my opinion on that here in the coming weeks, but I'm not overly optimistic. And, I don't think this is a function of Kevin Stefanski's not letting him do it. I mean, Tommy Rees told us yesterday, the offensive coordinator, he said, yeah, he wasn't shy in training camp in the preseason throwing the ball down the field. Okay, great, but it's the regular season now. He's the starting quarterback, so could we see some of that, please? That's just kind of where I'm at.
Also, when did this organization start whitewashing what happened in the preseason with Dylan Gabriel? He looked good in that last game. I remember the rest of the preseason as well in camp.
Yes, and training camp as well. So, hopefully we start to see some positive from him this weekend. Again, not optimistic, but if there's a team where he's going to have the opportunity to do that, Nick, it's New England. Let's see what he can do against that Patriots secondary.
Daryl, you and I both fans of Quinshon Judkins. I can say that now because he's run for several very good games and many touchdowns. Yeah. But long term, when we look at Quinshon Judkins and when we consider the state of the NFL, do you think you can build a offensive identity long term? We're talking multiple successive seasons, mm-hmm. the way Tennessee did with Derrick Henry, around Quinshon and maybe a Ryan Tannehill level quarterback?
I think it's tough in this day and age because it's a passing league, and that's nothing against Quinshon because I'm a big fan of his. I think he's a tremendous player. By the way, has as many rushing touchdowns in fewer games than the entire Browns team has catching touchdown passes. Five. He's got five, and then everybody combined, you got five touchdowns for the Browns receiving. Tillman's got two, Sampson's got one, Fannin's got one, and Njoku's got one. Quinshon's got five. That, just to put in perspective how anemic this passing game is. But I just feel like in today's modern NFL, I think it's hard to just build solely around a star running back, which I think Quinshon has the talent to become. You got to have a quarterback that can get some explosives going in the passing game, because, by the way, that makes life a little easier for that running back. But I just think in today's day and age, I think it's tough. I'm not saying it's impossible. I just think it's tougher to do than maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Daryl, we had the debate earlier this week about the defense and what caliber of defense you have. I've heard it referred to as a championship caliber defense. What that means to me, so I'll set my definition for it, is on the back of that defense and very little else, you can be a championship team a la like the Ravens with Trent Dilfer. I think other people might think, top five, top 10 defense. I guess we'll ask you, what is your definition of a championship caliber defense? And do you think the Browns are already there?
Well, if Maria championship caliber defense is just pure domination. And we've seen that in spurts with this defense where they have been dominant, but they also haven't been consistent. Red zone defense needs some improvement, right? They're not there yet as far as a championship caliber defense, but they've got the talent to be. I think that they are a top five defense. I think you said top 10. I think they are a top five defense in the NFL right now. And the potential is there for them to be better. I think the schedule here in the next couple weeks is going to help them a little bit as well, because the competition, at least from a record standpoint on paper, appears to be softening a tad. But I don't think that they're a championship caliber defense just yet, but they do have the makings of being one of the top defenses in the NFL this season.
Daryl, what does a win on Sunday against the Patriots mean for the Browns?
I think it just gives everyone a positive taste in their mouth going into the bye week. You got the Jets after that. Maybe you can pick up a little momentum and, you know, I don't know, string three wins together. That would be great. And then that would get you to 4-5, and you feel like, okay, maybe we can salvage something from this season. I still think, you know, playoffs and wild card and that type of conversation really doesn't fit. But I think that that's kind of what it does, is it really gives them a little bit of confidence going in to having a week off, rather than if they go in at 2-6.
Daryl, who do you think has a bigger axe to grind with their ownership? The Jets with that dumpster fire, including the comments made by Woody Johnson earlier this week, the wasting like Geno Smith and Sam Darnold and Aaron Rodgers and countless former quarterbacks going elsewhere and being good, or the Browns with this situation over the last 13 years?
Well, can't fire the owners, right? And Jets fans obviously know that. Look, I mean, at least the Browns have made the playoffs in recent memory. And where they've gone wrong, it's in two areas. One, the Deshaun thing, right? They should have never gone all in, all that. And I realize hindsight's 20/20, but that's, you know, Andrew Berry was ready to pull the plug on it. And then, you know, we all know what happened. And so I just hope that whatever quarterback decisions that get made are made by the football people. And by the football people, I'm talking Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski, Tommy Rees. Those three folks need to make whatever decisions those are, whether it's who's playing and when they're playing and how long they're playing, all that kind of stuff, to what happens next April. Because I still am not there where everybody's getting fired in January. I know that, you know, conversation percolated a couple weeks ago leading up to last week's game against Miami because of how things were going. But I still believe that these guys are going to be back next year. And I just hope that they get to control their destiny and not have any outside influences from the folks writing the checks.
Daryl, you excited for the World Series starting tonight?
I am. Unlike members of the morning show, I'm going to watch the World Series tonight in Shohei Ohtani. I keep an eye on what the Cavs are doing, but like, I am not obsessed with anything else right now. There's a lot of basketball that's going to be played between now and June. Plenty of opportunities to watch whatever team you want to watch and whatever player you want to watch. Shohei's having a pretty historic postseason. Blue Jays in the World Series for the first time since the 1990s. I mean, a lot of fun. Of course I'm going to watch that. It's history in the making here.
You were spot on.
There's no history to be made tonight in the NBA.
You were spot on that it was Owen's betrayal of baseball that was the worst part of that. And not Lima. Of course, Lima's a baseball troll. All right?
Yeah.
You know, like, what do we expect from Lima?
You could have just stopped at troll, but yeah, baseball troll works.
So I will ask you, is baseball best when the best player, the highest paid player, is on the championship team? Or do you think baseball's best when maybe if Shohei had signed in Toronto right now, you'd have the juggernaut Dodgers against the best player in baseball and the Blue Jays?
I think baseball is best when everyone's got an equal chance to compete.
So never?
Right. I mean, the NFL model seems to be the model. I know the Browns are the exception to the rule. They find a way to defy the odds of the quick turnaround and being able to, but that's how the NFL's built. That's why it's so popular, is because every year all 32 teams or 31 of the 32 teams can realistically think, hey, this could be our year. Things can turn around even after an awful season. Not so much in Major League Baseball. It's, you know, the fact that the Dodgers are able to spend what they're able to spend without batting an eye. I read an article this week that with the $700 million contract that Shohei got, I guess Dodger ownership allegedly has made all that money this year alone, which is inconceivable to me, but you know, that's what the article said. And it's a shame, like here in Cleveland, where we have a franchise that is so intelligently run, if only they had an extra $50 million they could spend. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if only they had enough to go out and get that piece to push him over the top. Instead, it's like, well, this is what we have to work with, and we're making do with what we got, and that's good enough to maybe win the division or get us into the wild card round or the division series or every once in a while the ALCS, but a legit shot to win the World Series, it feels like it's an insurmountable climb when you don't have the big spending ability from your ownership group that you're seeing from a lot of these larger markets. And quite frankly, I think the sport suffers. I think the sport suffers that Jose Ramirez is not as much of a household name as Shohei Ohtani is, because I think Jose deserves to be. But, you know, this is what the sport does to itself. I hope everyone enjoyed trying to find where the playoff games were broadcast this year. I couldn't tell you. So, you know, and there's some things that with how baseball has to be covered, which I think is just completely backwards to how society is today. I mean, you can't live tweet from any media availabilities. I wasn't allowed to film the postseason availabilities in the room. I had to wait for Major League Baseball to provide video. Like, it's the dumbest thing in the world. Timelines should be flooded with all this kind of stuff. And baseball's like, yeah, nope. We're controlling everything. And they wonder why their sport suffers behind the NBA and the NFL.
All right, Daryl, we got about 15 seconds here. Halloween's coming up in 1 week's time. If you had to eat one candy or choose one candy to receive for Halloween for the rest of your life, what are you choosing?
Snickers. Layup. Snickers.
All right, 15 seconds. Why?
Peanuts, caramel, chocolate, just pure deliciousness.
It's hard to have a wrong answer here. If you chose.
Well, no, it's not. If I would have said candy corn, I would have understood your objection.
Well, no, I meant like of the chocolate candies. Like, you could even go Skittles, and I'd be like,
well, Twix, right?
I wouldn't. You could go Kit Kat.
Milky
you can
Way.
Go York peppermint patties, which are my wife's favorite candy. You can go just about damn near anything except
Absolutely.
Candy corn. Daryl, we got a boogie, buddy. Appreciate you.
You bet. Have a great weekend. Enjoy all the games.
You as well, buddy. Daryl Ryder there, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. When we come back, we'll react to what Daryl had to say and a set. But yes, Black River, good luck to that team out there. My brother Aaron, who's a coach there as well. But, uh-oh, what's this now? We're going to the bat signal here. The on the fan hotline.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We're welcoming in Anthony Lima. Anthony, what's up, bud?
Nick, what an honor and a pleasure. I was excited to call in earlier when you were talking about various sports subjects, including but not limited to Victor Wembanyama. I heard a clip, and I didn't want to ambush the show, so I told Mac, no, I don't have to get in. I'll just enjoy the show on hold. But he said, no, I'll get you ahead of the 30 callers. So yep. I said, okay, fine. That's not very nice, but I'll do it. And I am pumped because you guys are getting me excited about Sunday's game, which, I didn't think we'd care about. I thought the Miami game would be some, you know, just kind of a bad game, you know, a 9-6. End up winning that game, and I'm like, all right, now we've got renewed interest in a game which has a chance to be, you know, a statement game on the road. So I'm fired up. I'm actually fired up for Sunday.
Yeah, I am too, and I thought it was interesting. Like, I just think it's more of a competitive game than people think, and I think it's a great chance for Kevin Stefanski to prove he can run the ball while also passing the ball, and I think it's a great chance for Dylan Gabriel to prove that if there's a wide-open Quinshon Judkins 15 yards down the field with an open end zone, he can just hit him instead of taking the four-yard run.
Oh, I can tell, Nick, you have been dialed in to film breakdown on social media.
All 22, baby.
Yeah, that showed up. I know the NFL's cracking down, by the way, on people posting clips, which is mind-boggling because it's another avenue to get people excited about your sport. So That one doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But you're right. I think they got to just get creative in the run game. And, you know, there's a big debate to be had about the Pittsburgh game, whether you could get creative or whether they just had your number and so you had to abort the mission. But, you know, last week you saw them get creative. I know it was Miami. And they did have some trouble running the football anyway against Miami, which is a little alarming. But, you know, the fact that you even have a running back that seems like there's a reason for excitement and there's some Nick Chubb 2.0 in there, I think is pretty awesome. But I did want to get to this Victor Wembanyama thing because people were mortified that I said I was more excited to see Victor tonight than Shohei, which I get it. Like, it's the World Series. It's a regular season basketball game.
But you're also a basketball first guy. That should be part of the record, right?
But this is the thing. Growing up, I thought all of us were baseball first. Like, that was the sport, and the World Series was the premier sport. It was bigger in our household than the Super Bowl in the mid to late 80s. And obviously that's not the case almost anywhere, you know, in today's day and age. So it kills me that I'm not as into the World Series. The sport doesn't seem to have the same bragging rights. Like, when a team wins a World Series, it's kind of forgotten the next year. You don't have the trash talking between the fan bases that you do in the other sports. So I think that's unfortunate because the game in itself, the World Series, has always been awesome. It's a great spectacle. But just over time, I don't know, I fell out of favor with it because that, like, great, Shohei tonight, he's not pitching. So you'll see him once every half hour. And yeah, he could do amazing things like he did in that all-time performance last week. But even that, I feel like, has been kind of quieted. Because what happened? We had a lot of football takeover. And so baseball's always going to be battling with that, especially this time of year.
Well, they didn't help themselves, Anthony, by putting the game one on a Friday when you had multiple days this week without any football, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday, where you could have done that and stolen the spotlight. And they're very prideful about, well, we're not afraid of football, even though they should be.
100%. And that's just, you know, this never used to matter. We didn't used to have football, you know, every other day, you know, throughout the entire fall to contend with, not to mention you saw high school football. But, you know, when the Indians were in the World Series back in the 90s, you know, we were obviously all watching. And I think more of America was watching back then. But then I add in this Wemby thing. I could not believe the clip that you guys played. Was it Spike Eskin?
Yes. On the Kevin O'Connor show, which I was also confused by.
Okay, so very interesting that, you know, Owen, I heard you guys reference that he, you know, was like, this is almost unfair. Like, he almost can't be in the league. It was looking that easy. And, you know, even when LeBron was dominating and at the forefront of athleticism, and then he was weaving in skill over time to continue to get better at his craft, and by, like, year eight, it was the total package. Like, he was missing all sorts of things and still dominated basketball games. Victor, what is he missing? This is unbelievable what he was able to do against a guy. He made Anthony Davis look like 6'3". Mm-hmm. That's how dominant a performance it was. And normally in sports, when you have such an advantage in height or, let's say, weight or athleticism, you also have weaknesses that, you know, other teams can attack. And that was the case with LeBron. He had some weaknesses. He had trouble on defense at times early in his career. You know, he had to figure out what body would make the most amount of sense for him to optimize his performance. Shaquille O'Neal, he had the obvious big advantage with his weight, but there were a bunch of things he couldn't do, and teams tried to take advantage of that and tried to get him on the perimeter playing defense. This Victor thing is crazy. His height should also be a massive weakness. With him trying to get out on the perimeter and defend, or him trying to put the ball on the floor, and it's not. It's not a weakness at all. The guys can't just take the ball from him like you would expect small guards to just crowd him and be able to pick his pocket, and it doesn't happen.
Well, and
this is such a game changer.
The thing that bugged me was JP made the point that Spike Eskin was saying, if he was a foot shorter, would he still be a special player? And I'm like, to me, I was like, it's obvious. Like, where's the weakness in his game 3 years in that you wouldn't think he would be? I mean, maybe he's not, they'd be able to command the court the exact same way, but if he's a 6'8" guy that can do what he can do as, like, a point guard meets a forward, I would imagine he'd still be dropping 25, 30 points a night.
Yeah, he seems to have such a firm understanding of, you know, people picked his game apart the last 2 years, and he, you know, settled for too many outside shots in his fight. And what did he do, you know, in the opener? He decided to, that's right, I'm going to take Anthony Davis inside, who normally has a physical length advantage, height advantage, and none of that was the case in that game. And if he's doing that to Anthony Davis, what is he going to do to everybody? You know, I want to see him matched up with Evan Mobley, like, immediately. I can't wait for a battle like that.
It sounds like one of your kiddos really doesn't agree with your opinion.
Nick, this is normally what it sounds like when I'm arguing with Ken. one diabolical question before I get off.
Sure.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Would you trade our big three, Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, for Wemby straight up?
No, because I don't think you have the skill players that San Antonio has around him, so I think it'd be easier to shut down Wemby.
All right, Nick, gotta go. I do it, bye.
That's very Anthony Lima. I was going to jam him up about the coffee carafes, but then I wanted to make the kid about the joke about the kid. 216-474-0092. You heard Lima's diabolical question. Would you go with it? Would you trade the big three for Wemby? The answer is no. In case you missed it, in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.